Okay, distinguished guest, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. It's my honor to moderate this panel to discuss Chinese shipyard and global shipping. Firstly, we will have an introduction of our panel. So myself, it's coming from Lloyd's Register. It is a very old company, have existing 264 years. So this is a charity company. So we're devoted to advanced technology, improve quality and safety standard for the land-based industry and the maritime industry. So we have office in over 90 countries. So let's say whatever trading port, we will have surveyor to cover the port. So that's Lloyd's Register. So I pass to my panelist, have a self-introduction first. So Ms. Lin, can you?
My name is Lin Qingshan from China Shipyard. Our shipyard focuses on gas carrier and also very large container vessels. It's my pleasure to be here again. Last year, I also take part in such panel. Well, it's my pleasure to exchange ideas with our colleagues and friends from shipping industry.
大家下午好，我是来自湖东中华造船的黄国良。湖东中华是中船旗下的一个骨干企业，我们主要产品是大型的 LNG 船和大型的集装箱船。然后湖东中华又比较强的一个设计能力，就是我们在建的大型 LNG 船和大型箱船都是我们自主设计的。然后特别再点一下 LNG 船，就是沪东中华是国内最早进入 LNG 船建造领域的船企，经过30年的发展，已经发展到第五代那个 LNG 船，基础性能指标的话已经达到全球领先水平，非常高兴能参加此次论坛，谢谢。
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jason Zhou, Zhou Yuchen. I'm from Adora Cruises Limited.Also one of the subsidiaries of CSSC Group, and now we are now operating the first built large cruise ship of China, Adora Magic City, and also one of the our existing ships, Adora Mediterranean. Now we are going to build up one of the flagship company in the industry of cruise in China. It's my pleasure to be here, and nice to meet you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for Nikos's invitation for this year's conference in Shanghai. I had the pleasure of being here last year as well. My company, Marine Plus, was set up in 1988. We've been dealing with China since the early 90s, mainly in terms of shipyard representation for retrofits, dry docking, new building.We have a series of cooperations with marine equipment makers in China. And we also deal with a series of other technical services for the Greek shipping market. It's always a pleasure to come back to China. I've been traveling to China for the last 30 plus years. Always nice to be here.
大家好，我是 Optima 船舶经纪公司上海的刘颖。我们公司1982年在希腊成立，于2004年底在上海成立。我们主要从事于船舶经济活动，包括新造船、二手船买卖、修船、海工和项目。通过近20年在中国的经济活动，我们已经和中国的船厂、新造船和修船船厂和中国的船东、中国的设计公司建立了很好的合作关系。非常感谢有机会在这里和大家分享船舶航运和船舶在中国的这个角色的话题。谢谢大家。
As you can see, This panel have people from class side and two gentlemen from top class shipyard in China, and we also have a ship owner, group owner. So we have broker and the marine service company. So it's a mixed group. So we're going to talk about Chinese shipyard mainly, and all how Chinese shipyard can support global shipping. So I have a few questions I'm going to ask. So my first question going to Mr. Lin. You know, China holds a significant market share on global shipbuilding, but the competition remains fierce from other countries like South Korea and Japan. We understand these countries are invest heavily on advanced technology. So from your point of view, how Chinese shipyards should further improve their innovation, capability, and the efficiency, especially on high value vessels?
感谢古战。那个，从目前中国尽管占据了世界的最主要的，今年占据了世界70%的市场份额，但是这主要还是由于中国造船工业的一个质量、效率、成本和我们的竞争对手相具有一定的优势。但是同时，中国造船行业也注意到，在高价值船舶的竞争和在创新方面的竞争是我们未来的方向。作为江南造船来说，是我们的战略还是一个科技导向型的船厂。这个科技导向型呢，不仅仅是针对我们的高价值的产品，新的满足我们的绿色的可持续发展的产品，同时也是通过创新的方法来提高我们的效率。比如说我们从2018年开始就投入大量的资源来进行数字化的转型工作，实际上我们在5年之前就建造了世界上第一艘没有采用任何纸质图纸的大型钢制船舶。同时我们现在把这个三维的模型充分运用到整个建造的过程中，从我们的合同设计到我们的详细设计到生产设计，都充分的应用同一个模型来保证我们建造的效率。在此之外呢，我们还把这个模型用于我们和船东的交流，和船东在建造过程中对整个船舶建造的检查评估调整。更重要的是，我们和船东一起啊，也把这个数字模型啊进一步发展，来用于培训船员，来用于船东未来的改装和对未来的新技术的应用。这个是我们在数字造船方面做的一些工作。同时呢，我们基于这些数字模型啊，这也会为我们以后智能船舶甚至无人驾驶船舶打下了一个非常好的一个坚实的硬件的基础。在数字化方面，在船本身这个产品方面呢，我们现在聚焦的产品其实都是气体船和大型集装箱船这两个主要产品。实际上我们和现代交流非常多，非常频繁，几乎每个月都会有交流。现代的产品结构和我们的产品结构是非常相像的，但是我们产品的性能呢，特别是我们产品的效率啊，比如说像油耗，比如说我们的灵活性来适应船东的一些需求，比如在新技术的应用上，都领先于我们的竞争对手。这个是我们在目前已经做的工作。谈到未来的竞争的话，我们中国造船行业还是充满了信心，特别是在技术革新方面。为什么这样说呢？因为首先是我们把技术革新，中国造船行业已经把技术革新作为我们重要的，大家都认识到这是一个重要的竞争手段，而且是不可避免的，实际上是最重要的竞争手段。第二个呢，就是我们中国造船行业呢，现在已经对这方面呢进行大量的投资，目前我可以说可能是 销售额的各个船长不一样啊，那将来来说的话，可能销售额的5%到10%进行那个新技术投资。我们的年产值大概在5亿美元左右，那10%到5%的话，就是在5000万美元左右。这是我们的想法。第三个最重要的因素呢，还是中国的这个工程师的红利。我们每年有上万的学习造船的或者造船相关的大学毕业生会加入我们的造船工业，这个是给我们带来了非常强大的一个人力资源的力量。第四个呢，还是中国是人是非常的勤奋啊。其实我们说很多人说批评996，其实对我们造船行业来说，996已经算是比较好的一个情况啊。我们开玩笑说我们是星期六肯定不休息，保证不休息，星期天休息不保证。在这种情况下的我们也看到我们面临着新的技术的挑战，不停地有新的产品、新的想法、新的船型。那我们不仅能够很快地把这些新的想法、新的技术应用到我们造船实践中，更重要的是我们能够迭代的速度是远远超过我们的竞争对手。因为我们可以有这么多人力资源，再加上我们这么努力，所以我们相信啊，现在的随着新技术要求越来越高，我们在这方面越来越会取得我们的竞争优势。这是我一个愿意跟大家分享的观点。
Thank you, Mr. Lin. From your talking, we understand Chinese shipyards are very diligent. So we spend a lot of investment to innovate and to improve our efficiency or technology to add value to our ship owners. So my second question go to Mr. Zhou at Dole Cruise. China has built the first large cruise vessel, now is successfully in service, and second one is on the construction. So what is our strategy to expand this cruise segment? And what recommendations can be given to our shipbuilder or local cruise company and the policy makers?
谢谢这个问题。那么应该讲呢，中国邮轮产业的这个发展，从本土邮轮产业的发展历史来讲，应该还非常短暂。目前整个中资的邮轮企业啊，不管是邮轮的建造企业、邮轮的设计企业，还是邮轮的运营企业，应该还在摸索和探索的时期。整个邮轮产业处在这么一个初生发展的时期，未来的前景我们认为还是非常广阔的。从长期来看呢，我们认为有相当多的有利因素利于中国邮轮产业未来的发展。首先呢，中国作为全球这个最大的人口输出地，整个的中国的出境游人数在2019年已经达到了大概1.5亿人次的这个水平。那么在2024年，虽然整体的旅游复苏还未达到2019年的水平，但是未来的这个增长以及存量，应该是值得我们邮轮企业挖掘的这个重要的客源。同时呢，中国的这个中产人数、中等收入人数一直在不断增长啊。那么不同的数字呢，有不同的估计啊。2到4亿人的这个中产客群，基本上都是邮轮旅游的目标客群啊。应该讲，这个是全球保有量最大的邮轮目标客群群体。同时呢，在这个前两年，我们国家的这个人均 GDP 水平已经突破了10000美元啊。那么以国外邮轮产业的这个发展历史来借鉴，突破10000美元以后，人均 GDP 的增长将极大地促使邮轮产业跨越式发展啊，对于邮轮产业的需求增长起到了非常好的托举作用。同时呢，中国目前的这个整个的人口结构相对而言也是有利于邮轮旅游发展的啊，因为中国的这个老年离退休人口啊，在今年预计达到1.4亿人啊。那么在这个基础上，随着中国的老龄化，目前整个趋势还是难以逆转的，因此有闲有钱的离退休老年客群会为中国邮轮未来的这个需求人口提供非常坚实的这个增长基础。但是目前来看呢，即使在疫情之前，2019年中国邮轮市场的整体渗透率相对于这么大的这个潜在客群，应该讲还是非常有限的啊。中国2019年整个的邮轮出游人次大概也就在200万人次左右啊，这个水平基本上也跟德国的邮轮人口这个水平差不多。那么相对于这么大的中国的这个潜在人群体量啊，这么低的渗透率，实际上也反映出中国整个邮轮产业虽然从2006年已经开始发轫，但是到目前为止呢，还是有非常多的可以这个深挖深耕的空间在。 但是疫情之后啊，我们也看到邮轮行业现在面临非常多的挑战。那么我们首先认为最大的挑战呢，还是来自于整体的这个宏观和外部环境啊。那么居民的这个收入预期，整个居民的消费信心啊，都受到了比较大的打击。那么在宏观经济环境还未完全企稳向好的这么一个态势之下，邮轮的需求目前来看，也没有恢复到疫情之前的这个水平。同时，游客在邮轮过程中所体现出的消费习惯和消费行为举止，应该讲与疫情之前也有非常大的差异。这个大家可以从各种这个旅游啊、消费啊，尤其是高端和可选消费的目前的这个发展态势啊，可以揣测出邮轮行业所现在面临的消费需求不振的重大挑战。同时呢，刚才也提到，因为整个中国的这个邮轮产业啊，尤其是我们运营企业啊，应该讲还是刚刚开始参与到邮轮运营这么一个重大环节之中，因此呢，积累经验啊，锻打管理体系啊，培育本土的这个产业链，应该还有非常多的路要走。所以我们看到，整个邮轮产业目前虽然前景我们还是非常看好的，但目前面临的这个压力和挑战还是非常艰巨的。那么未来的这个发展来讲呢，我不敢说对船厂啊，或者对于这个 policy maker 或者对于其他的这些邮轮运营公司有什么这个建议，但是从我们自身来讲，从爱达邮轮自身来讲，我们的目标呢还是建成中国啊自主可控的邮轮运营旗舰企业。尤其以爱达魔都号这艘中国首制的国产大型邮轮为契机啊，我们一步一个脚印啊，正在不断地建成中国自己邮轮运营的全方位能力。同时我们也希望为中国旅客能够提供符合中国旅客消费习惯迎合中国旅客消费诉求的这么邮轮产品。那么在整个的这个邮轮产业的发展过程中啊，我们觉得还是需要坚持这个专业化、差异化、本土化、国际化和市场化的原则。从专业化角度来讲呢，邮轮产业作为一个我们称之为漂浮在黄金水道上的黄金产业，它的覆盖面非常长，它的整个产业链也非常长啊。那么涉及海事运营、技术管理，涉及船上的酒店管理、餐饮啊，各类消费场所的运营管理等等很多门类啊。而且这些门类需要有机协调，形成一个系统整体啊。因此，对于整个邮轮运营的管理能力啊，要求还是比较高的。因此，专业化一直是我们公司所坚持的一个内部管理的发展方向。从差异化的角度来讲呢，因为目前我们看到国内的邮轮市场虽然需求还面临比较大的压力，但是各国的这个邮轮巨头啊已经纷纷回到了中国邮轮市场，开始参与市场竞争。那么目前我们看到整个中国的邮轮产品啊差异化程度还是不足的啊，大部分邮轮不管是大船、小船、新船、旧船所经营的航线基本是传统的日韩航线啊。那么对于整个消费者来讲啊，产品的差异化不足、航线的差异化不足、服务的差异化不足，一定程度上也造成了邮轮市场需求没有得到有效的细分啊，邮轮的客群没有得到充分的服务啊，整个的这个消费需求没有得到充分的挖掘深耕。因此各个公司不管是国内的还是国外的，不管是大的还是小的，应该讲在今年的三季度啊和未来将要到来的这个四季度啊，都会面临比较大的市场竞争压力。同时呢，作为一个本土的邮轮企业，我们觉得坚持本土化是未来中国邮轮产业未来发展的一个坚实的一个方向啊。因为中国目前来讲是世界上少有的同时具备邮轮设计建造和配套运营各产业链环节的国家，同时又有这么强的这个各大产业的扶持，同时也有这么深广的消费人群腹地啊，对于邮轮的发展应该讲本土化是未来非常重要的先天优势。最后呢是坚持国际化和市场化啊。这个邮轮毕竟是一个跨境运营的行业啊，在全球各地不断的扩展市场和我们的运营范围啊，坚持市场化和国际化，符合国际的相关规范，不断拓展海外市场，为中国消费者提供更多的国际目的地，应该讲是中国邮轮产业未来的发展的一个重要的方向吧。因此我们还是希望这个我们爱达邮轮能够不断地为中国旅客提供这个贴近需求啊，满足中国旅客习惯啊，为中国旅客实现美好生活向往啊，不断提供助力的邮轮产品啊，也希望能够与中国邮轮产业一起不断地向前发展啊，行稳致远。谢谢。
Thank you, Mr. Zhou. from insights from Mr. Zhou, we do see very good potential for the growth for Chinese growth sector. But the challenge is still there, so we prepared for that challenge and we're going to develop further for this segment. My third question to Mr. Huang. You know, our shipbuilding competitive strength, it depends on a lot on the cost control. A resilient local supply chain is vitally important for maintaining our competence. Hudong is a lead LNGC shipbuilder in China. So what can be done to support our local supply chain for LNG shipbuilding?
本土配套供应链的发展对船厂控制成本非常重要，一方面比较明显的就可以降低采购成本，另一方面本土化的发展有利于那个缩短那个供货周期，船厂也可以得到更及时的一个现场服务，有利于船厂快速推进生产进度，从而来降低生产成本。对于 NG 船来说，国内的配套率大概是60%左右，跟韩国相比，我们还是有蛮大差距的。韩国现在可以达到85%，也就是说，我们其实还有很长的路要走了。推进国产配套率的发展，其实是需要各方相关方合力去推进的。除沪东中华外，国内其实还有江南其他四个船厂已经进入了 NG 船的建造领域。其实 NG 船的中国 NG 船的能力越来越强，相应的配套也会越来越多。其实我也想在这呼吁一下，希望国内的配套企业也能够积极参与到那个 NG 配套产业链的发展中来。对于船厂来说，因为很明显就是说本土化的发展对船厂控制成本是很有利的，从船厂的角度来说也是愿意积极去推荐就是本土的那个厂商给到船东，像沪东中华也一直在致力于做这个事情。现在我们有一个 NG 船项目本土化率可以达到70%，就是说当然我们在推荐的时候也希望得到船中的一个支持和配合，船厂的那个成本降低了，其实对船厂可以提供更有利的更有竞争力的价格，对船东也是有好处的。所以我也希望就是说各国船东也能相信中国的配套，相信对，然后能够愿意去使用中国的NG 的配套企业的产品。当然可能最重要的还是那个配套企业自己本身需要做一些事情，比如说把控好品质，然后建立全球的售后服务。从我们向船东推荐的过程中，就是船东比较关心的就是全球的一个售后服务体系，所以我希望就是说国内的配套企业在全球售后服务体系这方面也要加强，树立良好的一个品牌形象，就争取获得船厂跟船东的一致认可，为未来的一个持续发展打好基础。谢谢。
Thank you, Mr. Huang. Doing business, actually, we all need a partnership. So shipyard need a supplier to be their partner, and ship owner also need a shipyard to be their partner. So then we can develop all together. So my next question to Dimitris, with the pressure coming from environmental regulation, do we see good potential for retrofit and conversions? So from technology side or market demand side, how do you see this potential?
Okay, obviously at the moment there is already existing activity, as was mentioned by several other speakers before me, on regarding retrofits and conversion to do with decarbonization as well as reduction of fuel consumption. I'll just go through some of the, let's say, the major items which are on the table at the moment. On the one hand, we have a group of energy-saving device components which can be done normally during the intermediate or the special survey of a vessel. We're talking about ducts, PSF, pre-shrouded vanes, propeller boss, fin cap, on the one hand. Number two, optimize existing hull forms. This is normally done mainly on larger vessels with main emphasis on large container ships, where there is a bulbous bore modification done together with normally with a high efficiency, rather the change of propeller to a high efficiency propeller. So that in combination also with ESD, with energy saving device. Air lubrication, which has been mentioned in previously as well, this technology of using air bubbles that actually reduce the resistance between hull and the seawater. WAPS, wind-assisted propulsion systems, either rotor sails or fixed stationary sails. Solar panels, again, not that much happening at the moment there. Now coming, let's say, to the more the heavier conversions. Conversion from conventional consumption on a main engine propulsion engine to dual fuel. I just had lunch with a yard in China that they did the sea trials of one vessel which was fitted to, rather went from conventional to methanol dual fuel. And that was done in the region of just below 3 months. So again, this is something which will be occurring, I think, only in case the charters actually have the will to participate in the investment, because there the numbers start getting quite high. Fitting of a shaft generator, fitting AMPS, the so-called coal ironing, so the vessels can use shore power when in the ports. This is something actually which in China, I think China is the only country at the moment that's doing serious investment in infrastructure to actually have ports manage to actually have this on shore as a facility. Otherwise, you have it on the vessel. If the port doesn't have it, not much meaning. OCCS, onboard carbon capture storage, again, something which has not been fully commercialized, but there have been a couple of installations, mainly running just to see if the system actually works, capturing 20, 30, 40% at the moment. Theoretically, that could go up to something in the region of 80, 90%. Basically, I think those are the main the drivers at the moment. And obviously, the demand is there. First of all, reducing fuel oil consumption is always a good thing, as we all know. And as long as we have EXI, CII, people will have to come up with ways of actually dealing, as has been said by my predecessors here, dealing with the current shipping market and the current fleet. Irrespective of how we handle, let's say, the future issues coming up.
Thank you, Dimitris. You know, to make the shipping more greener, so one way is to build a new ship with higher efficiency. Another way is to retrofit the existing fleet. So it's a way to make our shipping greener. So my next question is go to Ms. To Ingrid. It's about China in the global shipping. So what is the role of China in global shipping? How do you see it?
Okay. So China's role in global shipping is multifaceted and indispensable. As the world's largest exporter and a major importer of commodities, China is the heartbeat of global maritime trade. Chinese ports such as Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Ningbo consistently rank among the world's busiest, handling a significant portion of global container traffic. China also plays a critical role in shipbuilding, with its yards producing the majority of the world's merchant vessels, including those for renewable energy sources and greener shipping technologies. In addition, China is a leader in shaping the Belt and Road Initiative, which seeks to enhance maritime infrastructure and connectivity across key trade routes. This initiative not only strengthens Chinese logistical influence, but also expands the role of Chinese capital and expertise in global shipping networks. As the world shifts toward decarbonization, China is poised to be a leader in driving the production and adoption of alternative fuels and energy-efficient shipping solutions. However, Chinese commitment to balancing its industry growth with environmental sustainability will significantly influence the global shipping industry trajectory. These dynamics highlight that China is not just a participant, but a key architect in the future of global shipping. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid. China is not only the biggest Chinese shipbuilders, but also the largest ship-owning company. Ship-owning countries. So, I would like to ask Mr. Lin another question about the container market. You know, we have seen many disruptions, and some first disruption actually bring unexpected opportunities for us. And in this year, we see container ship owners were actively placing new orders. So how do you see this market?
时间也比较紧张了，我就简单讲几个。一个就是我对这个相传的新造船市场还是非常的乐观的。为什么？第一点呢，就是目前很多人还是认为目前相传已经订造量过多了，但是根据我们的测算和分析的话，目前整个相传的订造还是比较合理的，是由它真正的需求来驱动的，并不是由投机来驱动的。这不仅仅考虑到它的新船替代，不仅仅考虑它的货物增长，也考虑到它的这个船龄各方面的因素，这是第一点。第二点呢，我也想跟大家分享一下我的想法，就是班轮公司的业务和其他的航运板块的业务还完全不一样，因为他们是市场份额是他们最关键的生存要素。从目前来看的话，我们这么多订单，我们看到只有个别的班轮公司是在为它的市场份额在那个订船，其他的班轮公司还仅仅在根据它正常的需求来订船，所以我们认为后面还会有很强大的需求。其实大家可以看，在过去的一波高峰的时候，咱们相船的订造量占到整个船队的60%，现在我们才多少？20-30%差不多吧。所以说我感觉空间还是非常大。第三个呢，就是回到刚才讲到的这些突发事件啊，这些不稳定事件，其实我感觉这些突发事件、不稳定事件是短期之内是难以解决的，这会成为一个长期的现象。那作为我们供应链的话，可能需要和以前过去的一些年不一样，以前是效率优先，现在我们可能必须要考虑效率和稳定性。那既然要考虑稳定性，那我们就必须要为这个稳定性付出一定代价。所以的话，我感觉的话，未来的需求还是很大的。当然呢，同时我们也感觉到在船型上也出现了一些变化，可能从大型化方向已经向灵活化方向在转变。比如说原来跑一些航线的24,000，可能向19,000，可能在转变，可以再向低速化再转变。这些方面的话都是一些新的需求的出现，所以总体而言，我对整个相传的那个未来的需求还是充满了乐观的信心。好，谢谢。
Thank you, Mr. Lin. I can say you still feel very positive about the container ship market. Although there are some talking, you know, about the container ship market, because there are so many orders being ordered. So the people think this is very amazing. What is the drive and what is the future?Anyway, so thank you for sharing your insight. Concerning the time, so I'm not going to ask one by one, so I'm just, I'd like to ask Dimitris, because in China we know we have hundreds of small to medium ship owners, and from my experience with these clients, So we feel that it'll be a challenge for them to catch up new technology and maintain high quality fleet. So I would like to ask you, share with us how to Greek small to medium owners adapt to the market.
Okay. I think there are similarities, let's say, in the structure of the Greek shipping fleet compared to the Chinese, with the exception, of course, of the fact that in China the larger operators, owners, obviously are state-owned, whereas in Greece everything is privately owned. But we still have a large number of, again, what do you define as small? Small can be 1-2 vessels, small can be 5-10 vessels, medium can be anything below 25. But I've heard this topic come up in many conferences over the past 20 years. I mean, there were always new things coming into shipping in terms of regulation, in terms of new requirements, and there was always a question, how are these small guys still in operation? Well, from what I see, I mean, they are still operating, even under these quite challenging times, where even the larger operators have to put on the thin cap to come up with strategies for now, for the medium and short term, medium and long term. But seems like, again, a lot of, I'm talking now from, you know, my experience with Greek owners. A lot of what is classified as small to medium, almost all of it is family run. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that these companies are very vigilant. They're very up to change very quickly. They're very flexible. Normally, either the father or the uncle or the grandfather were actually seafarers, mainly captains, but also, in certain cases, chief engineers. So there's very much hands-on experience. Apart from that, again, the tools available, they have got, for example, decarbonization. A lot of the companies that we deal with in this category, I mean, they are doing energy-saving devices. I mean, that's something which I feel is still within, let's say, their budget and their investment possibility. Obviously, the other availability is slow steaming, more underwater cleaning, optimizing operational practices, reducing idle time. All of this is there for these owners as well. I think the small owners, I see there's been a trend, even with you know, kind of single-digit fleet, to actually diversify. So an owner can have, let's say, 4 bulk carriers and 1 or 2 tankers. Most probably the tankers initially, because the setup isn't there, I mean, the infrastructure isn't there to actually deal with the crewing, etc., the requirements from the majors for the wet. So those vessels will be farmed out to third-party managers, and eventually will come back to the company once they've set up their internal structure. So that's something which I think also assists the smaller owner, let's say, apart, assists anybody, but the smaller owner in particular. Using various pools for procurement of lubricants, chemicals, same applies for pools that are used for chartering. Where again, the upside, you don't get the full upside, but you're more covered and protected on the downside. Again, I don't have any, there's no quick answer to that question, but it is a phenomenon which is still there. My feeling is that the companies with, let's say, 1 or 2 vessels, I mean, they, I think over the next 5 to 10 years, they will find it difficult to actually keep their operation in-house. So possibly there may be some outsourcing, I mean, actually giving vessels to third-party management. But again, as far as I can see, for the time being, and a lot of these customers I've had for 30-odd years, I mean, they're great people, they're seafarers, they know their business, and we have a lot to learn from them still.
Thank you, Dimitris. You know, Greek is a very traditional ship owning company. So there are many ship owners, they love the shipping industry. So that's why they can find a way to survive, to grow, to get the advantages, to develop themselves. So my last question goes to Ingrid. who is a broker, so dealing with ship owner and shipyards. So what do you see the current challenges for ship for the global shipping?
So 我认为就是当今航运业其实面临的最大挑战之一是需要脱碳。虽然航运业占全球二氧化碳排放量只有3%，但是新的监管环境为越来越严格 IMO 的2050年目标和欧盟将航运纳入其排放交易体系增加了复杂性，所以在这种情况下平衡合规性、成本和盈利能力是航运公司面临的重大挑战，还有不确定的经济形势和地域政治紧张局势加剧了这一挑战。另外，网络安全也是一个非常紧迫的问题。随着航运数字化的加速，随着人工智能、区块链和自动化等先进技术的采用，航运业越来越容易受到网络攻击，从勒索软件到 GPS 干扰和操纵运输数据，这些威胁可能会破坏整个供应链并破坏全球贸易，所以对强大的网络安全协议的需求比以往任何时候都更加迫切。因为成功攻击的后果不仅会削弱运营，还会导致严重的财务和声誉损失。所以说航运业目前是历史上最具变革性的时期之一，所以所有参与航运业的船东、船厂、设计公司都面临着巨大的挑战。谢谢。
Thank you. As you can see, we do see a lot of challenges for the global shipping in current situation, because the environment regulations, it's something we have to be dealt with. We have to make a greener shipping. So, concerning of the time, so I'm not going to ask an audience for a question to us. If you have any question to ask, you can always come to our panelists. So, thank you for your attention, and thank you for our panelists.